Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. On August 12, 1995, James Abernathy, 15-year-old son of Larry and Diane Abernathy, was playing Marco Polo in a neighbor's swimming pool late one night when he dove into the shallow end, breaking his neck and becoming permanently paralyzed from the shoulders down. In Present Suffering, Future Glory by Diane Abernathy, she chronicles the tragic event and the years that she spent as his primary caregiver. She also shares very candidly about her struggle with borderline personality disorder and her attempted suicide in May of 2017, which initiated a horrific experience in a rehabilitation facility. 6 months after that experience of her own, her husband of 43 years was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and died 4 weeks later. Present Suffering, Future Glory by Diane S. Abernathy is a reflective confessional of her own struggles and traumas in her life, and she's our guest on This Week in America. Hi, Diane. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Rick. Thank you.
It's such an important message that you have in this book, and in reading reviews, you've helped so many people who have gone through tragic ups and downs in their lives. You do an excellent job in writing this. Talk a little bit about that here before we get into the actual message. Have you always wanted to be a writer?
Oh, I've always been a writer, whether or not anybody read it. I've been writing my whole life.
Well, it really shows in this. You've done such an excellent job in the book. The book is Present Suffering, Future Glory. Diane's website is dianesabernathy.us. We'll give you all that information as we go through the program. What was it that inspired you to write this book, to take this story and incorporate your own personal experience and experiences in it as well? What was the inspiration for writing Present Suffering, Future Glory?
Well, I think when I started it, it wasn't really intended to be a book. I started it to kind of help me, because writing has been good therapy for me my whole life.
Yes.
And if I'm very emotional or upset, then I take it to print. I, you know, write it down. So the first part of the book I wrote probably about 15 years ago. And then I thought, oh, yeah, this would make a book. So a friend of mine, who's an editor with the Veterinary Information Network, she's been encouraging me. Leanne, that's who I dedicated the book to. She's been encouraging me for the last 15 years to get this finished.
Well, and you have. And again, like I say, it's touching so many lives. It's interesting that you were writing your thoughts down. Was that journaling that you were doing as you were going through all of these traumas?
Yeah, it was.
How important is that? Would you recommend that to somebody? Because it sounded like it really helped you sort of sort out your feelings, and it was a very positive experience for you.
Yes. And at the end, when I go through, when I was in rehab after my suicide attempt, for the first 2 days, I was supposed to have a journal, but they didn't give it to me. And the third day I got the journal, and it made a big difference that I could write everything down.
Well, that's just part of the amazing story that Diane tells in her book, Present Suffering, Future Glory. I like that title. Explain where the title came from, how you chose this title.
That title came from James, actually, when he was in the emergency room. They took him by helicopter to the emergency room. And as he said, he's 15 years old. And he kept quoting Romans 8:18. So it's from the Bible. And I can't remember all the verse, but it says that, you know, our present sufferings are worth nothing compared to our future glory.
It's amazing that came from actually James. It's the title is very capturing. It's Present Suffering, Future Glory. Diane Abernathy is our guest and the author. That's Abernathy. Her website is dianesabernathy.us. Book available Amazon and pagepublishing.com, the usual places. We'll have all that on our website. We'll mention it again as we go through the program. You were adopted at an early age. I believe it was like 6 weeks. Oh, I'm going to talk about that for a second. Have you searched and found your birth family? What was that like? What were you going through in attempting to find out who Diane really was?
Well, ever since I found out that I was adopted at probably about the age of five, And my parents didn't tell me. I learned it from a kid down the street that I didn't belong to my parents.
Wow.
So anyway, ever since I found that out, I've always been really grateful to my birth mother, you know, for having me, because even though abortions weren't legal then, they were definitely available. And I always wanted to meet her and let her know that, you know, I was raised by a loving family and everything turned out really good, and see how she was doing. And so when I was 1984, I was getting ready to start the Pregnancy Crisis Center. And I went to Chicago, which was her last known address, on my birth certificate. And a friend of mine, we looked and looked and looked. And for all the whole week, we looked for her and didn't find anything. It was uncanny because the microfiche for that year for the phone numbers was gone. Different things were just missing. And so I just really felt like God shut the door and I wasn't supposed to try to find her. So that was, like I said, in 1984. And then when I went with James to his law school, Regent University of Virginia Beach, a lady at church told me that she had just met her daughter that she'd given up for adoption. So I thought, well, gosh, I'll try that. Maybe because computers had come into vogue by that time. And, So she gave me the agency she used online, and so I wrote them and told them all the information I knew about myself, my babyhood. And so 2 weeks later, they came back and with all the information for my birth sisters and brothers. And it was really quite interesting because my mother was 30 years old when she had me, and that was always a real question mark in my mind, too. I always wanted to know, you know, 30 years old and she's getting pregnant out of wedlock, you know, it's just not usual.
Yes.
And so what happened, though, was my birth sister, she's my half-sister, she sent me, did she send me a letter? No, I'm sorry, she called. And the first thing she said was, "What took you so long?"
Wow.
To frighten everybody. And my mother, unfortunately, had passed away the year before. So I missed my mother by a year, but I got to know my two sisters, half-sisters, and my one half-brother. I think I met him once, but he's kind of a wanderer. So it was really interesting, you know, talking about their family and my family, all the things that, you know, hereditary came through.
Yes. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned you did not hear it from your parents. You heard it from a child in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
What was that like, hearing it that way? And I say that because probably families struggle with how do we go about approaching it? When do we do the child is adopted? And I would think the last thing you want certainly would be to hear it on the playground from another child. What was it like when you heard that from a child?
Oh, I started crying immediately.
Yes.
I was just so sad. And you know, he said, "You don't even belong to your parents." And he was being really rude about it. And so I rode my bike really fast all the way home, and I said, Mom, Jimmy says, "I don't belong to you. What's that mean? What's happened?" So she sat down with me. She was shocked. You know, they were going to tell me, in the next year or two after that, but she was shocked that I already found out. So she sat down with me, and she explained adoption, that they wanted a child so badly that, you know, and then there was a woman that didn't think she could raise one. And I said, "Well, what's bad about that?" She said, "Nothing. There's nothing bad about it." And I said, "Well, why was he acting like it was so bad?"
Yes.
He acted like it was horrible. But it was quite a shock at the time.
Well, I want to go back and pick up and talking about James and the life you had as his caregiver. Just one final question. When you finally put the missing pieces together with your life, with your birth family, what was that like when you finally were able to figure out who your mother was, the siblings that you had? What was that like when you got that news and that piece of the missing piece of the puzzle was found now?
It was really exciting. I was very excited to get to learn about them, their family, and my our common relatives are my grandfather and grandmother, and they just had a lot of history for me. And I don't know who my father was, and they don't either. Nobody knows who it was, but I guess my mother, my birth mother, had a really hard life, and she had a 2-year-old child that died. And then she had a divorce because her husband was abusive. And then she married the love of her life and for 9 years. And then she came home one day and he, blown his brains out. And they couldn't have kids. So they think that had something to do with it. And then she married another man and had 4 kids. Boom, 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 boom.
Jeez.
Yeah. And at first it kind of made me think, when I found out how many children she had, had raised, I thought, well, gosh, my younger sister is only 16 months younger than me, the oldest of their children. And so I thought, golly, why couldn't she have me? Why couldn't she keep me if she could, have 4 kids after me and keep all of them? But a friend of mine who had adopted a son, she said, Diane, she didn't know you then. She's not like she was giving me up. It was like,
exactly, yes,
afford to keep me. And and she was married for the other 4. So
Diane Abernathy is our guest on the program, talking about her book, Present Suffering, Future Glory. Her website is dianesabernathy.us, and all this on our website. Book at Amazon, the usual places. Let's go back and talk about how life changed for James and your family on August 12th of 1995. You become the primary caregiver. What was the hardest task, or what were some of the more difficult tasks that you had as James' caregiver? Because in reading the book, boy, there were a number of obstacles you had to overcome, weren't there?
Yes, very, very many. The hardest thing was that James was an athlete. He was very strong and he was a very talented athlete. And it just didn't really make sense to me and my husband why this would happen to him when God gave him such talent in baseball and soccer. He was so good though. He was so good about it. And like I said, he was quoting scripture in the emergency room, and some of the doctors and nurses sent notes to us and said that he really impressed them with his faith that, it was going to be all right. But the biggest thing that I had to learn to do all kinds of medical procedures. But the biggest thing was, I couldn't do his passive range of motion, whereas when you take their leg and you move their leg for them, because he can't move his leg, but you move the leg for them to keep the muscles so they don't get stiff, the joints don't get stiff. And I couldn't do that. And I think my husband had the same problem I did, because whenever I would try to pick up his leg and bend it, I would just remember all these times when he'd kick a soccer ball almost all the way across the field or ran to home, or all I could remember was the athlete. I cried the entire time they were teaching me how to do it. So we were blessed, though, with two physical therapists in our church, and they took over that part of it. They came and did therapy with him once a week. So that was good.
How difficult was it? You are trying to keep James positive and also keep yourself and your husband and the family positive going through this very difficult situation. How difficult was it to go through that for yourself and to help James mentally get through all of this?
Actually, it was the other way around. James was the positive one all the way through. If he hadn't been able to handle it, because his faith was so strong, I wouldn't have made it then. And I think my husband was kind of the same way.
Yes.
He was very depressed about it because he coached him for 20 years in baseball. And not 20 years, I'm sorry. He coached him for 10 years in baseball. And he was really looking forward to, him getting into high school baseball and everything. But James' attitude, one of the people that went to visit him at Drake Rehab Center after his accident, she went in and she was so sad and depressed about what had happened. And then when she came out, she was laughing. And she said, James is just astounding because, we go in all sad and everything because you think he's going to be sad. You don't want to, whatever. And then he starts joking around and, telling jokes and kidding around with everybody, and they're all laughing. So if it hadn't been for the way he handled it, I would not have handled it.
So it's interesting. So he pulled sort of the family through this rather than the other way around. All of this is in Diane's story, Present Suffering, Future Glory. Diane S. Abernathy is the author of the book. So James is in a wheelchair. Talk about some of the scary situations that he faced being in the wheelchair, a whole new form of life for him.
Yeah, he was paralyzed from the shoulders down, so he has a little bit of wrist action on his left hand. So he has a big power chair. It weighs about 350 pounds. And he uses his left hand to use a joystick on the left side of the chair. And the biggest thing, I think the scariest thing that ever happened was when he graduated from Miami University, he wanted to go to the reception, and the religion building was not accessible. And so we got these big steel rails that reached from the ground up over to the porch, over the stairs to the porch. And he did okay, you know, pretty good going up. It was a little scary. But when he came back down, my husband was trying to control the chair from behind him. And, of course, gravity was doing a lot more anything. And he had just sped up, and it started going real, real fast. And I just thought my husband was going to be crushed underneath it when he got to the ground. So luckily he jumped aside just at the last minute, and the chair didn't turn over, which was also a concern. So that was scary.
All of these stories.
And another thing was, I'm sorry.
Yeah, finish that thought, please.
Well, the other thing was when he was at Miami, he the very first year he was a religion major and a philosophy major, double major. And the religion professor said he'll have to take an independent study. And the disability director said, no, you need to move to the first floor. And so the professor said, no, I'm not moving to the first floor. So he said, I'll give somebody a key, and James can meet him down at the elevator, because it's a keyed elevator. Kids weren't supposed to use it.
Yes.
And so anyway, that worked really well until the guy with the key, you know, skipped class. And then James is sitting there waiting to go up the elevator. There was nobody there. So James finally figured out that he should have the key on him. And then he would just, you know, grab somebody from the hallway and say, can you, you know, put the key in the refrigerator, in the elevator, and I'll go up. And they did that. But the scary part was he was by himself. He couldn't use his hands. So if the elevator had gotten stuck, that was it.
Boy, that's...
And that was even before he had a cell phone or anything.
Well, yeah, it's so much that James had to overcome. And the story, the ups and downs in Diane's book, Present Suffering, Future Glory. You have an older son, Josh. When something like this happens, it happens to the entire family, this whole new lifestyle after James broke his neck. How did Josh handle this? What impact did this have on the family?
Well, Josh has always had really low self-esteem. He was a good athlete, like James was, but James was always better in almost everything. But Josh, he liked... working like as a referee. So he got to work as a referee at a young age, probably about 11. He started reffing little kids in baseball.
Oh, yes.
And but so he got really excited about making his own money. So he kind of gave up on sports and joined the workforce. And he didn't make good grades. He didn't like school. And so he had pretty low self-esteem. And he got in with the wrong crowd of kids, and they started, you know, smoking marijuana. And when the accident happened, I couldn't get hold of Josh. He was out somewhere. I don't know where. And so, but finally, at 2 o'clock in the morning, my neighbor, I called her, and she tracked him down. And so at 2 o'clock in the morning, he comes down to the hospital to see what's going on. And he said, I don't understand this. Why did it happen to him? He's the good one. So it had quite a negative effect on Josh. And then he got more into drugs. He was in jail. And everybody was always saying, how can you handle this? How can you handle your son, you know, being a quadriplegic, and you have to take care of him, and then your other son, you know, doing drugs and being in jail? And I said, you know, it just kind of slipped off my back, because there's only so much the human spirit, the human body can take.
Well, yes.
So I was focused more on taking care of James. I've kind of regretted that. Obviously, I feel bad about that. But Josh came around. He's doing real well now. He has his own business.
Fantastic.
And he actually went to college. He's going back to college to get his BS.
Well, that is great. A few minutes left in the program. Time is going by so quickly. All of these stories and more of the ups and downs in Diane's book, Present Suffering, Future Glory. What impact did this have on the marriage? That suddenly there's a whole new element to this marriage, and it changes dramatically, as did the rest of your life. What impact did this have on the marriage?
when I was reading a lot of books by quadriplegics and different people, like Joni Erickson Tada, you know, she's pretty famous.
Oh, yes.
Quadriplegic. And I read all three. Her books were by my bedside, you know, constantly. But they said, they did research, and they said that the parents of spinal cord injured patients that have become paralyzed, quadriplegics, 4 out of 5 marriages fail. And
wow.
I read that, and he kind of teared up, and I took it to my husband, and I said, read this. This is awful. 4 out of 5 marriages fail. And he said, well, we'll have to not be one of them. We just won't be one of them. So it was kind of both my husband and I were very, very stubborn people. And he was, both of us were kind of overachievers. So we just told ourselves it was not going to happen. But it did definitely take a toll because, first of all, I didn't get to see him a lot because I took care of James at night sometimes, or most of the time at Miami. I drove up to Miami every year for 4 years. And so I wasn't here during the night. So I was not with my husband then. And then I'd come home and I'd sleep. And sometimes, you know, he'd be going to work when I got home. So it took quite a toll. And if we hadn't been so stubborn, we definitely wouldn't have made it.
Well, it's interesting you got through that. And all of these stories are in Diane's book. I wish we had much more time to talk about this. The book has been called a Must for Anybody Who's a Caregiver. And you go through all of the ups and the downs and trying to get through all of the difficulties and trying to go through that with a positive attitude. It's all outlaid how Diane got through this in the book. How is James doing now? It sounds like things are going well for him. Talk about where he is now, and do you consider this, boy, this is a phenomenal story that James has helped write.
Yeah. James, when he graduated from Miami with his BS in philosophy and religion, he wanted to go into politics. And I said, I don't think you can go into politics with a double major in philosophy and religion. I said, why don't you go to law school? Because I always thought he'd be a good lawyer, even when he was little. He loved to argue about stuff. And so anyway, he said, I couldn't handle the books, you know, because back then the technology wasn't there for having everything on computer.
Oh, yes.
And he said, you have to have all kinds of really heavy law books. I wouldn't be able to handle the books. And so he went instead to Fuller Seminary in Pasadena, California, and got a master's in theology.
Amazing.
And still wanted to be a politician. I said, yeah, you're going the wrong way, bud. So one time we were at a baseball game and he ran into one of his old baseball team buddies, and his buddy had just passed the bar exam and was going to go to work for a certain firm. And so I could tell when James was listening to him tell his story that his wheels, I could see the wheels turning in James' head thinking, well, if he could do it, maybe I can do it. So then he took a weekend course to take the LSAT and did very, very well on it. Had 9 scholarships offered to him, and finally he chose Regent University Law School, which is the only Christian law school that is approved by the American Bar Association.
Okay.
So I went with him there for the first year, and sorry, I have a tendency to ramble, but he went there, and then he actually got married, and she helped him through the last 2 years of law school, but she hated it. She hated taking care of him, and so she left him, and that was really tragic for him because he was very much in love with her.
Yes.
And so then she said she would come back if he'd learned to take care of himself without his parents' help, and if he got a job, because he had lost the job offer that he had gotten coming out of college or law school. So he learned to do all those things for himself, and then along came his dream job. And it was working for the Freedom Foundation in Washington and Washington State, which was like 2,546
wow,
miles
yes.
away, but who's counting?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really scary. That was scary for me. You know, well, I'm sure it was scary for him too, but he went up to Olympia, Washington, the capital of Washington, not knowing anybody except, you know, the ones who hired him. And he was there for about 3 years. And then he met another girl online at eHarmony, and she lived in Michigan, and they started a long distance relationship, and then he asked his boss if he could work from home, And he so I said, yeah, yeah. And James says, is it okay if that home is in Ohio? Because I want to get closer to this girl so I can get to know her,
yes.
you know, without her having to fly out here. And so he did. He told him it's okay. So he's still working. He's been working for the Freedom Foundation since 2014.
Fantastic.
What
an inspiration. I mean, that has to motivate everybody in the family to see what James has done with this this accident and how his life dramatically changed and how he's been able to pull it all together. It's just a remarkable story, the highs and the lows that you're so honest in talking about in the book Present Suffering, Future Glory. Hopefully we can continue this conversation. So much more to talk about, Diane, and what the family went through and how James is doing now. So excited to hear that that things are going well and he was able to fulfill so many of his dreams that he had in his life. And the book is Present Suffering, Future Glory. It's available at Amazon, pagepublishing.com, the usual places. Diane's website is dianesabernathy.us. And we'll have all this information on our website. Diane, a pleasure having you on the program to share a part of your story. We encourage people to read the book and find out everything. And again, for caregivers, this is a must read, what people go through in being in that position. Thank you for joining us on the program.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
It has been our pleasure. Diane S. Abernathy. The book is Present Suffering, Future Glory. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.